Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell, and I'm very lucky to be sitting here with Hugh Mackay about his new book, Beyond Belief. Welcome, Hugh.
Thanks very much, John.
Now, we had a bit of a chat about this this book, because this is a subject which it could fill hours and hours of radio discussing, because everyone has an opinion on this subject. We're looking for the meaning of life, in essence, whether or not we need religion to give us the answer of the meaning of life or not, or how to live life. Do we need religion to help us, guide us, or not? And throughout the book, Hugh wanders through many different answers and different perspectives on this. I just want to get a sense of sort of a snapshot of where Australia is at the moment. Are we believers or are we not? Or what's going on, Hugh?
We think of ourselves as a Christian country still, even though only 8% of us actually go to church weekly, about 15% once a month, about 25% at Christmas or Easter. 68% of us in a couple of recent polls say we believe either in God or some higher power, some vague something out there kind of thing. And in the last census, 61% of Australians ticked the box Christian. So there's a huge disconnect at the moment between the way we like to think of ourselves. Oh, by the way, we should add into that, almost 90% of non-churchgoers in Australia say they like having a church in their suburb. And although church attendance has gone through the floor, enrolments at church schools have gone through the roof. So there's all these sort of contradictions. To say we're a secular society would be quite wrong, given all of that. And yet most Australians would want to say in the same breath, we're a Christian nation and a secular society. And I suppose in a way you can make sense of that if you think of a very contemporary, emerging understanding of what Christian might mean. It doesn't have to mean, and this is one of the themes of the book, it doesn't have to mean anything supernatural. There are plenty of people who would say they are Christian in terms of their values, their respect for the traditional teachings of Jesus, the so-called core Christian values, but wouldn't want to necessarily say there was a God out there somewhere that they can believe in.
Yeah, you're a man who likes data, and this data is very confusing.
It requires
a book to answer it. Because it must have set you off. You're looking at this data thinking, this doesn't really fit any quick answer. This needs something to be explored. This is, you're a great campaigner for your books, and you get out and talk to a lot of people about your books. And this, I believe, is going to be one of your longest campaigns. I think this conversation will begin and you'll be edging out of the back of the room trying to get home to bed. Who do you turn to when looking at other alternatives to Christianity? Because Christianity, as you said, there's the basic tenet of Jesus Christ, which for a lot of people seems like a lot of common sense, to be good to your neighbour. It seems not too great a stretch.
Yes, although, could I just cut into that, John? That's true, and a lot of people do say, it is just common sense. But of course, in writing this book, I actually went back to see what the gospel writers said about their reports of the parables in particular, and the so-called Sermon on the Mount, which Christians, I think, would generally regard as a sort of distillation of the teachings of Jesus. And it's actually not that straightforward. I mean, it's really pushing the boundaries. It's really, it's all about, by the way, none of it is about what you should believe. Mm-hmm. There are no boxes to tick about virgin birth or resurrection or any of these things. It's all about an extraordinary degree of sensitivity to other people, a willingness to go the extra mile, a willingness to show compassion towards people you don't like, who you wouldn't necessarily regard as your neighbour. Mm-hmm. So it's quite a testing set of values, and yet most people would say pretty glibly in Australia that they sort of sign up to Christian values without perhaps fully grasping that it is it's quite a tough call.
So you, I mean, I've always thought of it as being good, as being far more intellectually challenging than the opposite.
Yes.
Requiring great feats of imagination to be able to put yourself in other people's shoes, and that type of sort of virtual exploration of someone else's feelings.
Yes.
I've always looked to literature as my guide. Yes. And my crutch, I suppose, in doing that, because in my mind a great writer is giving you a wonderful test, a way to test how to feel about things and how to work through an issue. Mm. What ways have you, in your book, what ways do you wander about with this issue? What sort of solutions are there out there for us?
Well, first of all, let me say, I think literature is the great source of insight into how people, an analysis of how people live and what drives them and so on. And it is a work of imagination, all of this stuff. I mean, faith is a work of the imagination. You have to be able to imagine what it is you're putting your faith in. People who call themselves theists and say they believe in God have to be able to imagine that God. It is a product of their imagination, because you can't see it or touch it or taste it. So we are in the realm of imagination when we're in the realm of faith, including specifically Christian faith. For this book, I went back to the Gospels, which of course are full of stories. I mean, the parables are all, in effect, Jesus saying, best way to illustrate a point to you is to tell you a story about some people.
Yeah.
So it's full of all these stories, about 40 of them. And I had never read them in such a concentrated way before. So that was a source. The other source was that I did many in-depth personal interviews with people right across the spectrum of faith, from the hardline atheist who'd been raised an atheist and never darkened the door of a church till he went to his uncle's funeral when he was 23 or something, all the way through to people who are really fundamentalist Christians, just to get them to tell me the story of their lives, really.
Yeah.
Which, of course, because of the purpose of the book, was really getting them to tell me about the meaning of their lives. You used that expression, the meaning of life.
Yeah.
In a way, this book is saying, don't worry about meaning, capital M, of life, capital L.
Yeah.
Let's focus on how we can derive some meaning in our own lives. And many people, as you suggested a moment ago, John, many people do draw on religion to help them to develop a sense of meaningfulness in their own lives, and many don't. They find some other pathway. But one of the things we know about the deep satisfactions for human beings is that we need some sense of meaning in our lives. It's not about the pursuit of happiness, it's about the pursuit of meaningfulness.
Mm.
And most of us get this sense of meaning from our faith in something larger than ourselves, by which I don't mean a supernatural God, but something like, for example, the power of love, or the power of kindness, the power of compassion, forgiveness, all of these things which are not, which are quintessentially Christian, but also belong to many faith and mystical traditions.
Mm.
These are the things to do with how we respond to other people, especially other people in need. These are where our sense of meaning comes from.
You mentioned other religions, other beliefs. In Australia, we are a multicultural nation, and just within the Christian, under the title Christian, we end up with a whole range of different beliefs under that one title.
Yeah.
We also have a whole range of other beliefs. In your work, have you wandered over some of those and looked at whether there is any similarities between these beliefs that we can use as a sort of a multi-faith sort of solution?
Mm. Yes, and I can't pretend that I've done deep study of any of the other great world religions. Of course, I've read about them, particularly in preparation for this book. But because our culture is so heavily shaped and dominated by Christianity, I've focused more on that. But the fastest growing religion in Australia is actually Hinduism.
Which is amazing, I didn't even know that.
It's still under 2% of the population, but it's growing more rapidly than any other religion. And we have a similar number of Muslims and a few more Buddhists, and I think 0.5% of the population are Jews. So we are a mixture. But yes, underneath, particularly Hinduism, strangely enough, and Christianity, and Buddhism, you do find very, very common themes, which are not typically the themes about the supernatural, but they're the themes about how we should live, and in particular, the importance of love and respect towards each other. Mm-hmm. Now, it doesn't always come out like that, particularly, even as you said, within Christianity, we've seen centuries of terrible conflict between Catholics and Protestants, for example.
Yeah.
All believing in the power of love and all signing up to Christian values.
With God on our side.
So it goes off the rails very easily. And I think, and it's one of the themes of the book and why I called the book Beyond Belief, it goes off the rails much more quickly when we get bogged down in dogma and beliefs. And we say, you've got to believe this in order to be a Christian, or you've got to believe this in order to be a Sunni, or whatever it might be. And then we're in trouble because we clash about these beliefs, even though our underlying faith in, for example, loving kindness as the greatest power in the world is shared, but it gets obliterated or at least obscured by dogmatic beliefs.
We saw that with nationalism also in the 20th century.
Yeah.
You know, the same Christian nations fighting each other because of a difference of nation and heritage.
Yeah.
There is a movement. There is a, and I once sort of went along with it, but I found that it's sort of more repellent now than not. But I don't class myself as an atheist. I think of myself completely removed from the question. The people like Dawkins who have brought this question to the table, to my mind, have done a disservice to non-belief. Do you cover this sort of issue in the book?
Yes. The book isn't very kind to Dawkins.
Poor Dawkins.
Because I think that whole argument, you know, the whole setting up of atheists, theists, etc. I mean, the book, like you, John, the book really suspends that whole argument and really says we don't... These questions that could never be answered, we don't need to address, because there are so many questions about how to make our society better that we do need to address.
Yeah.
And in the case of Dawkins, I mean, his attack on Christianity in particular, but religion in general, seems to be so outmoded, as though it's an attack on a God that for most people doesn't exist anymore anyway. I mean, the people who believe, like Jung believed, that God is within us and among us, there's this source of love and compassion that's, you know, what Abraham Lincoln referred to as the better angels of our nature, etc. That's all within us. It doesn't come from some external source. There would be many people, including many who would call themselves Christian today, who would say the only God I believe in is the God within us and among us, the spirit of loving kindness among human beings. Well, Dawkins has nothing to say about that. He's still fighting a battle that almost ended when Nietzsche pronounced that God was dead, because of course what Nietzsche was saying was the God, the supernatural God out there is something that post-Enlightenment Western Europe really didn't believe in anymore, and God as the author of our moral code we didn't accept that anymore once we began to realise how moral codes really are formed. So, you know, for 100 years, Christian theologians started saying, well, actually, yeah, that kind of God is dead, but that doesn't mean religion is dead or the Christian faith is meaningless. It just means we have to rethink how we imagine God.
Yeah. Hugh Mackay, thank you very much for joining us. As I said, I mean, this is just a taste of what's in the book. This discussion could go on for hours, and I will not lead you on for hours and hours. You've written a book about it, and I should sit down with your book and read through it, because this is a fascinating subject. And as I said before, when you tour around, be ready for long conversations. And when you're asked for question time, all hands in the audience are going to be raised. Thank you very much for joining us at Booktopia.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you, John.
Beyond Belief is now available online at booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.